It's great to be in with you tonight. Listen, I'm sorry for anybody who wanted to speak with Jesse Ventura tonight, but he had too much to say, and he only had 2 hours, and it's 3 a.m. in New York, and he's just not going to do it. I mean, that's how it is. When he says, I got to go, that's what he means. His yes is his yes, and his no is his no. And I'll tell you, I consider it an honor to have been able to speak with him tonight. And, you know, I'll just let this little cat out of the bag. You know, the magician never tells you how the trick is done. Otherwise, what's the point of seeing the magic show, right? That's analogous to what I'm about to approach you with. You know, out of like 100 emails, you always get one or two that are like, well, your guest tonight is, as usual, 40% truth and 60% BS. And, you know, somebody sends me an email like that, just strap in tight because you're liable to get a response that's going to be like this one. Well, thanks, genius. Why don't you write me a treatise and tell me what the real story is? Ventura's out there doing the work. He's doing the yeoman's work. He's the one that put this book together. How many of you could put a book together? And you know, every revolution begins with one voice. Why not yours? We'll be right back with your call, some news items that may be of interest to you as we make it on through the night. And thanks again to Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, for coming on the program. His new book, you should get this, you really should. Well, there's nothing, I don't get paid to tell you this. I'm telling you, I have the book, I'm looking at the book, I'm reading the book, and it's great. They killed our president, and he didn't, they did. 63 reasons to believe there was a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. Well, there was, and we all know it. And I was happy to hear Jesse Ventura say that, yeah, he agrees. We need closure with that which broke our hearts as a country, and it's still broken. Well, let's heal it. You know, when you cut something and it heals, there's a scar there. And the scar is tougher than the tissue was before the cut. So remember it and stand by for your calls. This is Coast to Coast AM. Happy Saturday night. Happy, happy. Oh, yeah. Well, some of the news items are 83% of the federal government is still operating. I told you, this has happened many, many times. Well, not many, many, but more than a dozen. And not much happens. And obviously, those in power, and we don't want to offend anybody, you know. Some people don't want to be entertained. They want to be amused. When, like a clown? No. There are people in the administration are trying to make it hurt as much as possible. And just trying to inconvenience all they can. And then blame one of the two parties. But Jesse Ventura, I mean, very astutely expressed, these two parties need to, they probably pretty much need to go away at this point. And just, you know, like I say, if you get tired of something, if you want it to go away, quit buying it. All right. As we go through, there's so much stuff out there. The craziness that happened up in D.C. Some civil disobedience. This is from the InfoWars website. Civil disobedience. Americans breach barricades around the Lincoln Memorial. Yeah. Peter Schiff warns of martial law. Let's see. A Wisconsin governor defies order to close federally funded parks. Michael Savage. You know Michael Savage? You know? I saw a dog and it barked at me because I scared it. You know that Michael Savage? The only outrage at the execution of that woman in Washington, D.C. is on Jones's prison planet. So there you go. And there's more. Here's one from Full Spectrum Dominance. That's a great website, full-spectrum-dominance.com. Report, NSA has little success tracking Tor. Do you know about Tor and the Tor browser? If you want to find out about it, go to Tor Project, just T-O-R, torproject.org, and you'll find out. Here's the story from October 4. The U.S. National Security Agency has repeatedly tried to compromise Tor, the government-funded online secret tool, but has had little success, according to a new report in the UK's Guardian. I know it's anonymity. I was trying to be funny. I'll stop. The NSA has tried multiple strategies for defeating Tor, with its most successful method focused on attacking vulnerable software on users' computers, including the Firefox browser, according to the report published Friday. In the Firefox attack, NSA agents have been able to gain full control of targets' computers. The words are full control of targets' computers. and they cited documents given to The Guardian by former NSA contractor, you guessed it, Eddie Snowden. NSA documents provided by Snowden, which The Guardian began publishing in June, say the agency is collecting bulk phone records in the U.S. as well as internet communications overseas. But in many cases, the NSA has been frustrated in its efforts to target Tor users, an irony because the open source project is largely funded by, yes, the U.S. Department of Defense, the NSA's parent agency, and the U.S. Department of State. Quote, we will never be able to de-anonymize all Tor users all the time, according to one NSA document quoted by The Guardian. That's a publication out of the U.K. Going back to the quote, with manual analysis, we can de-anonymize a very small fraction of Tor users. The NSA has had, quote, no success in de-anonymizing user in response to a specific request. So there you go. Yeah. Well, Vince has been on hold for a while. He's up there in Montana, so let's go to Astro Line number one. Vince, how are you?
John B. and Jesse V., two of my favorite truth seekers. I'm glad you let Jesse just do the talking and save the questions till later. But you got your mind open tonight?
As much as I can, yeah. It's gaping.
Well,
what's up?
You know what? I was going to ask Jesse, did he know that Jackie Kennedy worked for the CIA from 1949 when she went to the Sorbonne in Paris until 1953 when she was married to John Kennedy?
Didn't bring that up with him. Now, how do you know this?
Well, it's written about in books, and I mean, it's admitted in her biography, and I mean, she worked for the CIA.
Well, I was hoping maybe you could name the book.
Well, I can dig it out.
That's okay. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just trying
to. I understand. So I sent you an email with numerous sources in it.
Okay, gotcha.
This evening from me. But anyway, you know. The Illuminati celebrates these killings of the king in song and poem. And in 1974, a year before the Zapruder film was ever released accidentally, Freddie Mercury and Queen wrote a song called Killer Queen. You should play it as a bumper music sometime. It's all about Jackie Kennedy's experience in Paris as an assassin. She was a built-in remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy.
Whoa.
She was sitting back and to the left with her Guns and Roses. And I think when you take a good look at the Zapruder film, it's hard to make the case that JFK, the kill shot, wasn't delivered from point blank by Jackie Kennedy.
Oh, man, that's so far out there. I can't even get my mind around such a thing.
Well, John, women kill their husbands all the time, and certainly she had motive and opportunity, let alone training by the CIA.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's very interesting. I'm going to get into that and see what I can find. In fact, if you start hearing...
Well, I sent you an email that has everything you need to do. But one good website is called Back Engineering the JFK Assassination with the Killer Queen. And that's a great website. They've done some great research on that one.
So that's the name of Back Engineering. What's the rest of it?
JFK Assassination.
All right. And what.com?
I sent you the links. So.
Okay. Well, that's extremely cool of you to do that. And I'll look into it, and we'll get back together on the air next time you call. How about that?
All right, John B. I know you're always looking for the truth. And you know what? Sometimes it's so shocking that you have to throw everything aside and start anew. So.
You're right about that. Thanks for the call, Vince. You know, it is written in Scripture. Solomon wrote it. With much wisdom comes much sadness. And he who multiplieth wisdom, multiplieth pain. Astro Line number two, Michael in Kent, Washington. Hello, Michael.
Hello there, Mr. Wells. I used to live in the house where Oswald lived when he was accused of shooting the president. And I used to live in the house for about maybe like 8 months. And
no kidding.
The lady who owned the house was Gladys Johnson. And she was his landlady when he lived there. And there was another lady who lived there named Katie Gage. And she said that they both said he was a very quiet, well-mannered housemate, a nice guy, and not somebody you think would shoot somebody. Yeah?
Yeah. Was that in Dallas? Or was that in New Orleans?
It's in Dallas. In Dallas. And
okay, gotcha.
It's the house where he lived. And it was on when you lived in Dallas, right? remember North Beckley over in Oaklawn?
Sure.
It's over there. It's right where Beckley and Zhang come together. And then up the hill from there is the Texas Theater. And it's like maybe 4 or 5 blocks from there to the left as you come out of the house.
Oh, you're talking about Oak Cliff, not Oaklawn. That's Oak Cliff.
I'm sorry, Oak Cliff. That's right, Oak Cliff. Oaklawn is over by the airport, by the Love Field. The house is now for sale. The granddaughter of Mrs. Johnson waited till the 50th anniversary to put the house up for sale. But the thing is, the significance of the house is kind of gone now because his bedroom was, as you enter the house, you come into a big living room with an organ in it. And back to the far left side was his bedroom when you entered the house. And they have since taken that bedroom out of there and made it into like a shelf with books and library on the wall. And
amazing.
The bedroom he lives in no longer exists. And people, especially during the summertime, during vacation time, would come to the house and ask to see the Oswald room. And sometimes she would let them, sometimes she wouldn't. And sometimes she would charge them like $5 or so. Sometimes she wouldn't, Mrs. Johnson. And when I lived there, it was just a coincidence, but I was on unemployment then. And the person who signed my paycheck was the treasurer of the state of Texas. And his name was Warren G. Harding. It's funny that I'm living in Oswald's house. My paycheck is signed by Warren G. Harding. And my girlfriend at the time, when I lived there, my girlfriend, her mom used to work. She was a cocktail waitress for Jack Ruby in his nightclub. He had his nightclub owner. And she worked for him. And my girlfriend had some encounters with Jack Ruby before. Because he was flirting with the idea that when she's older, she could be a dancer in his club. And it's just a whole bunch of weird coincidences happened while I was there. And my phone number, my personal phone number in my room was 948-1980, and that was Reagan's election year, and Reagan was president then. And all kinds of weird stuff happened while I lived there. I just wanted to say that, in his room, his bedroom, was so small, I could touch both walls at the same time. And I'm only 6'2". I mean, it was longer than it was wide. The width-wise, the bed he slept in, I was the first person to sleep in the same bed as him because my room in the basement got flooded with sewer water. So for one night, she said, I can sleep in the Oswald room, which was kept vacant as a historical landmark. So I became the first person to sleep in his bed, same sheet, same mattress, same blanket as him for one night. And it was so small, it was smaller than a twin bed, a single bed. And the room was so narrow that when you got out of bed, there was you'd almost bounce off the wall and fall back in bed because there's no room for your legs, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The room was so narrow.
And that's amazing, man.
It was just, and I know that house inside and out. There was in the back of the garage. The garage was detached, and it was made into a little apartment house. It was like 5 or 6 units, and like they were like rooms, and everybody shared the same bathroom. And then in the basement, it was made into 5 or 6 units with everybody sharing the same shower basement, and shared the same shower and bathroom, and so she had about maybe like 12 renters in her house, in her garage. And she's since she's a long time dead by now, but Mrs. Johnson, and also I was the maintenance person and driver for Mrs. Johnson. She had a big red Mercury Marquis, and it was a nice car, but I was her driver, and I would take her out to dinner sometimes. I mean, as her driver.
Not, that's pretty not fun. Like anything else. All right, man, I got to go. Got to get some more folks on, but thanks for the call. That's some interesting lore, Kennedy lore. And we can't let this go, so let's not. All right, Jeff, La Quinta, California, on Astro Line number 3.
Astro Line number 3, that has a ring to it there, John B. I listened to you the first night you took over temporary control of the main deck, and you have held your own. I listened to radio. I don't know if that's a bad thing to admit or not, but you hold your ground. If you don't know something, you say, I don't know it. If you have an opportunity to get back with the person in regards to the answer, you say that. That's what we're missing in America. We have a president that has never been wrong in his life, and if he's ever wrong, just give him 20 minutes and he'll be able to scurry up somebody that'll take the blame. That's just a quick thing, but I wanted to say, I'm a veteran, and when they were dropping those weird chemicals out there, I've already been given a certain amount of disability, and I was going to see this judge, right? And anyway, to make a long story short, with what I know with NSA now, I take care of my 83-year-old mother. I'm proud to say I have no criminal record.
Good son.
I was in the Navy and the Army, et cetera, et cetera. Just, two college degrees, not really anything to scratch at. They came to my house after they'd ripped through my computers. I still haven't been able to get into my computers because they thrashed my my passcode. And they searched my house for guns. And the sad thing is I wish that I had one, but I don't. I with an 83-year-old mother, you just don't, want a gun around. But I can tell you that it was the most surprising thing I'd ever seen, two FBI officers showing up 2 days after I went to see this judge. And I can tell you, from the IRS to the judges that hear civil cases, something's just awful screwy out there. And it's not just to the Republicans; it's to veterans that question the gases that were left, a Desert Shield, Desert Storm, excuse me.
Yeah.
And you open your mouth, you go onto a website, you say something, your name stays there, and if it ever pops up, I'm here to tell you that they will show up at your house, And, just craziness. Anyway, there's nothing I can do about it and nothing I can say on my phone about it where I wouldn't get in more trouble about it.
Yeah, I got you.
Anyway, I love your show. I love you how you approach your guests. I love how you approach your the call-ins, John B., and you just keep up God's work there, my friend, and I will let you go.
Well, thank you so much. That was a very kind call. I appreciate your compliments. Here's the thing, when I was in training to be an aviator, you get this big book, this flight prep. And by the way, I recommend the GLIM as opposed to the ASA, because there are a couple of little tidbits in there that I find more useful. And as you go through these questions, I believe you're going to be asked 60 questions, but you don't know which 60 out of 300 they will be. So you study this whole thing. You cover up the answer, or you cheat yourself. And when you make your answer, you go back and see what you did. And it says, well, answer A is incorrect because of such and such. Answer B is incorrect because of such and such. Answer C is incorrect because of such and such. Answer D is correct because of such and such. So you actually learn more by making a mistake than you would if you got the correct answer. I made a 97 on my written exam, and I still don't know which question I missed. It's been dogging me for years. All right, some more of your calls and a good time, a few good tunes and all that. This is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. Glad to have you with us. We'll be right back. Well, thank you very much. If you go over to the coasttocoastam.com website, you will see in the news, elusive giant squid washes up on Spanish beach. An audio interview with Jim Mars. And the best ever photograph of the Loch Ness monster revealed as a fake. Here, you Maine, stop foisting these stupid fake photographs on us. You've heard of a wedgie? I've got a better one. How about a squirt of super glue down there as punishment for your foisting rubbish on us? There's a very interesting article up here, New Wildcat Robot. This is ridiculous. Boston Dynamics, with funding from our friends at DARPA, is developing a quadrupedal robot able to run like a cheetah. Well, those things will hit 60 miles an hour. Certainly, you know, 60 kilometers per hour, right? And this is a good one, too. You might be very interested in this. You know, this talk about shape-shifting stuff. A new shape-changing metal crystal is reported in the journal Nature by scientists at the University of Minnesota, the state that Jesse Ventura was once governor of. It is the prototype of a new family of smart materials that could be used in applications ranging from space vehicles to electronics to jet engines, called a martensite. The crystal has two different arrangements of atoms, switching seamlessly between them. It can change shape tens of thousands of times when heated and cooled without degrading, unlike existing technology. Currently, martensite metals are made of alloyed mixture, nickel and titanium. They have the remarkable ability to remember their shape, and even after being bent, will return to their original form. For this, they are called shape memory metals. They've been used in spectacle frames and brassiere wires, but also in surgery as frameworks for shaping healing bones and as stents for holding heart arteries open. Martensite metals could change shape when heated or cooled through a certain temperature when the atoms that make up their structure rearrange themselves in a sudden transformation. Some call this a military transformation. Oh, yeah. Because the rows of atoms that make up the metal crystal click into their new shape in an orderly manner. So you remember the suits. Robert Patrick, you know, T2, here he comes, running down the street with that look on his face. Well, that's what we're looking at. Gee, I wonder if this is some sort of extraterrestrial technology. I'm telling you, we're fixing to meet them. The proof that UFOs, well, they're not UFOs anymore. They're IFOs. They are identifiable flying objects. They don't come from here. They don't, do they? If you don't believe it, take a look at UFODC.com, UFODC.com. That's Wilbur Allen's site. He was on the program a few weeks ago, and his photographs are totally amazing. Now, he's not the only one out there taking photographs, but his site is stunning. But we blew it up last time, so maybe he's got bigger servers this time. Try not to blow it up again, but go take a look at it. It's fun. It's amazing. It's amusing. But mostly it's entertaining. It holds your attention within. All right, let's go ahead and do this thing real quick and then get back to your calls as fast as we can on the Saturday night soiree. Your electromagnetic nightlife impresario, John B., in with you for the ride tonight. Be right back. Intercontinental Astro Line, well, that might be pushing a little bit. Up in Ontario is Susan. Come on the bridge and speak with us, Susan. How are you tonight?
It's great to be talking to you, John. I was wondering if you've heard Naomi Klein of Shock Doctrine fame, her recent statement about the big green groups and how they've been hijacked and neutered.
Hijacked and neutered? Oh, no.
Yeah, they're hijacked and neutered by people who are more interested in money than good environmental causes.
Oh, I'm shocked.
Is the original founder of the Green Party of Canada, and he couldn't agree more. Since 2005, he's been trying to alert people that David Gelbaum gave the Sierra Club $100 million to not pursue immigration as an environmental issue. And that's a lot of money to not talk about something that obviously is having a huge effect on the environmental degradation of some of the best farmland across Canada. And that brings us to famed environmentalist David Suzuki's recent comments that Canada is full. And it's not because Canadians are not humanitarians, it's because immigration, mass immigration, has become not about humanitarianism. The people coming here are from the upper middle classes and elites, and they can have good lives in the countries they're coming from. Meanwhile, the people who live in destitute poverty in those countries can't immigrate anywhere.
Oh, sure, they're stuck there.
They're stuck, and they're the servants of the people who immigrate here and who continue to hold land in those countries, continue to run businesses. So it's not like there's social movement happening where those people can move up the ladder.
You're preaching to the choir here. I mean, I get it.
It's horrible. We got no jobs here and no job creation. I'm a Master of Social Work graduate, Bachelor of Social Work cum laude. I'm an Ontario certified teacher. I have countless other degrees, and I'm long-term unemployed. And all of the employment counseling here is It doesn't address race. I'm a person of color. What it does address is services for new immigrants. And I'm all for refugees and for political asylum seekers. They should definitely be brought into the country because they have no hope where they are. Their lives are in danger. But to be bringing the upper classes here when they can have good lives where they are, and it's creating so much detriment to us in terms of the jobs that are available to people who are going to school and doing what the government's telling them to do. They're saying, go to school and you'll have opportunity. But there's no opportunity, and there's masses of racism and nepotism. So, I mean, how is immigration helping the people who are already struggling here? My family came here and immigrated in the late 1960s, and I'm still struggling. My family's still struggling. And I've spent the better part of the last 20 years in school. And for what?
So, I get you. All right, let me respond to some of that stuff. And thanks for calling, Susan. I appreciate it. You know, she really kind of gave us like a 3-hour kind of college equivalency course in what's going on with immigration. And I'll give you the answer. And some people will not like it. So get ready to not like it. The United States places 17th in the developed world for education, according to a global report by education firm Pearson. Finland and South Korea, not surprisingly, top the list of 40 developed countries with the best education system. In the meantime, this country comes, that comes from Huffington Post Education. See, it's not all Fox News, you know, we'll read Huff Post. As a matter of fact, I will listen to any music as long as it's good, and I will accept information from any outlet as long as it's good. But I've gotten pretty good at spotting what I would like to call news spam, and there's plenty of it out there. Where the immigration thing is concerned, we don't need more laborers. You keep hearing this thing, the workers, the workers, the workers. Well, a lot of our workers are developing these quadrupedal robots that run as fast as cheetahs. What we need here are not more clerks, yard people, you know, landscaping people. We have people for that. We could even try using our kids for that. You know, the old clean out the garage Jackie thing. What we need are people who are strong in science, math, literature, art. We don't need more workers. This is all a prelude to a proletariat state, and believe me, if you think for 1 minute that the top dogs over there in the communist environment of the former Soviet Union were any less well off than the top dogs in the capitalist envelope of the United States and Western Europe, well, there was no difference. It's the proletariat, the workers. Okay, I've been a worker too. I worked some of the worst jobs known to anybody. I did everything except shovel you know what in Louisiana as a kid. And so what? I mean, I worked at a mobile home construction company just to kind of see what it was like. I wanted to see what are these people. I think I'll work construction this summer. It's like, what? Yeah, in 100 degrees? Absolutely. Did I enjoy it? Not really. But you get to see that. That people that have to work that kind of labor, that's not exercise, that's labor. You know, the things that they find precious to them, their tools, their lunch sack, their break, these things are important to them. They earn it, you know? But as far as immigration is concerned, what is the objective, folks? Seriously. Is it to just make this place like, is it economy rotation? That term that this guy thinks is a smart guy. Oh, yeah, John Wells, this guy said economy rotation. Is that what it is? we've had our day in the sun, so now we're just going to have to, like, have our day in the shade? Is that what it's going to be? It's up to you, but don't sit around and wait, because you know as well as I do that not only, it's one thing when the government covers up something. It's like, I'm not talking about the JFK thing. That's an absolute heinous, treasonous, traitorous, worst case scenario. I'm sure there are others that we don't know about, but isn't it natural that the public can't know absolutely everything that's going on? But there's a presumption there that the government is acting in our interest, and that's why they keep it secret. They're keeping us safe. They're looking after our well-being. Well, bollocks. Are they? Are they really? Now they're going to take your insurance fine for not signing up for it, if you can, which you probably can't, even if you're trying to. They'll just take it straight out of your bank account. And what do you think this is all about? Does anybody really think that socializing medicine in this country is to provide these 3 million people or 10 million people? We got 330 million people here. So how many million are without insurance? Anybody that I've ever known who needed urgent medical treatment, whether it was a spleen removed or they've got cancer, God forbid, or something like that, you know where they went? They went to the county hospital. You got no money. That's it. We're not, if we give everybody their $100, then our $100 becomes $1. Okay, that's all I'm saying. Look into it. You know, Ventura said, don't vote for Democrats or Republicans. John Wells has said, this left-right paradigm is nothing but a device to continue to divide us. And that's what it is. It's up to you. I can sit here, all these guys and girls that are doing this stuff. We had Amber Lyon on last weekend that talked about how, oh, yeah, CNN took money to run stories. Oh, yeah, CNN took money not to run stories. Well, you think they're the only ones? They're not. So come on, folks. We got to do this thing. We're running out of time here, right? Let's get Ray on. Ray on Astro 4 in Washington, D.C. And it's late where you are.
Hello, Mr. John B. Wells. You have a different style than George Norrie, but you know, John, you are very good. You should have a TV
Thanks,
show.
Thanks, man. Well, you know, you never can tell. I mean,
you're good, John. And your voice reminds me, unfortunately the man is gone, but he reminds me of a Vietnam friend of mine who was very intelligent, and you remind me of him, your cadence of your talk.
Listen, I appreciate your comments.
I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to Jesse Ventura. I'm such a big fan of his. He's a real patriot. You're a real patriot, John. I can tell, and I've appreciated some really honest things you've laid out there for people to motivate them.
And, well, I think there's enough BS out there. I don't want to contribute any more than, you know, I just do naturally. I'm trying to cure that ill.
Exactly. I wanted to ask Jesse, there was supposed to be a draft, and I don't know if you're familiar with this or not yourself, John, on Jack Kennedy's death the day he was assassinated in Dallas, of a rough draft at least, to get us out of Vietnam. Also, I found in a book, I have a book, and I've, you know, and of course it fits right in with the Coast to Coast show. I've been calling talk shows for years. I'm 69. I look 20 years younger, and I'm George knows me from calling. I haven't called for a year or so because I'm trying to get back. But after I lost my job the last few years, like the whole economy and everything else. Luckily, my
family,
I look younger. I'm dieting. I'm exercising. I have an excellent resume in my field, and I do feel I am destined to go back to work. I'm one of those lucky ones that can adapt.
Just don't quit.
You gotta be so darn strong to be able to do that. But
you just can't quit. You know, you've got to. Go ahead, man.
You can't. You've got to believe in yourself.
You got a lot to say. Come on. I'm going to sit quiet and you finish up.
Okay. Also, I found in a book that Kennedy was about to announce. I know this sounds weird, but besides having a draft to get us out of Vietnam the day he was assassinated, but shortly after that, he was going to, and I don't know if you're familiar with this or Jesse was in his research, about admitting that there was UFOs.
Yeah, and I've heard that. In fact, that program that I narrate called Unsealed Alien Files, we'll be talking about some of that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know there's going to be a lot of stuff on Kennedy's 50th anniversary. I'm looking at a statue I got at a flea market here in Washington. It's a bus that looks just like the one at the Kennedy Center. And anyway, there were many reasons, many reasons why they wanted Kennedy out of the way. And I think, you know, John, from what Jesse just said about Democrats and Republicans, I'm starting to feel, I'm 69 years old, I was 18 years old, and I still remember what the man said on the radio that time when Walter Cronkite cried about an hour later. But,
yep.
You know, it's like everyone remembers that moment, and it's like the words coming from that radio that day, 1 o'clock on a very sunny, a little bit of an eerie day. It was a little warm. Remember that? And then the man came over the radio and said, the president, we interrupt this program for a special announcement. The president has been shot, perhaps fatally.
Oh, yeah.
Something
oh, yeah.
you never forget. It's like...
Oh, boy, it was weird, too, because everything just went quiet. It was the same thing that happened when President Reagan was assassinated. Everything, it was like something's going... I was a little kid, and I'm like, there's something going on. It's just... Even the birds are quiet, you know?
Yeah, it was a very eeriness right after that, and everything completely changed. And like Jesse said, shortly after, a lot of people don't remember this because they'd have to be old enough in our generation to put it in perspective. The Beatles came on the scene right afterward. I was thought, many years later, I thought, you know, this was a way to reverse hero worship and to take our hysteria and our questions about who really killed Kennedy, we threw it into the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and the whole 60s took off with the anti-war demonstration, the hippies, and everything else. But it really started that moment, but we all got swept up into it.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, Ray. You know, as a matter of fact, now people will dispute this with me, but supposedly the Beatles came on the air, and I want to say it was April of 1964, but I saw them in approximately either September or I believe it was October of 1963, I saw this, and nobody was doing a thing in class the next day. I said, "Did you see that band last night?" They're like, "What?" Yeah, a combo. Call them combos back then. And when they came back on Ed Sullivan's show in 64, because I maintained they were on in 63, in the last quarter of 63, like I was building a B-17 Flying Fortress, the Memphis Belle, on my parents' den floor, and the show came on. I thought, wow, this is quite interesting. Well, the second time that they came on in 64, I went there, and the kids had already written down lyrics to entire songs. I'm like, where did you guys get this? They just came on. Like last night. Strange. Wouldn't it be interesting? And I wonder what the result would be if we could get that kind of enthusiasm to demonstrate this country actually belongs to we, the people. Wonder about that. Think it might have an effect. I do. We'll be back with some more of your calls in just a little bit. Got to do some news and commercials. Please open the outer doors and load the commercials and the news. Thank you. This is Coast to Coast AM.